Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Ooh, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. I see some clear skies up north of Mobile. I see some dark clouds coming. I reckon they're coming out of the southwest. Looks like we may be getting a little bit of rain. We could use it. It'll be good. It's always tricky to predict what's going to happen over the next few days, and it's gotten a little trickier. Listen, here's the thing. There's a lot of people who say, you know, there's a conspiracy out there. There's a conspiracy to make up numbers about how about the climate and how weather's changing. You know that conspiracy. Somebody's making those numbers up. Well, I just want to say the person who made up that 7-inch rainfall the other day over here in Mobile, stop it. Just stop making it up. It's not fun anymore. And the person who made up the hurricane that hit Mexico Beach, listen, we're tired of it. Just quit making that stuff up, would you? It's not fun anymore. It just doesn't work anymore. And the person who made up this hot September, listen, I am tired of it. You just quit. Just quit it. Lord have mercy. It's staring us in the face, folks. There's some interesting stuff. Do we have the numbers to prove that that things are changing? Yeah, they are changing, and we're going to have to be smart about it. We're going to have to look at it in a smart way. You know, we are used to thinking about seasons and temperatures and weather. Here's how we know it's spring and fall. We know it's spring because they're having an appliance sale at Home Depot, right? Yeah. That's spring. Lord have mercy, folks. What's fall? Is it lingerie sale? Is that what it is? Is it the fall lingerie sale? We don't have a very sophisticated idea of the weather, and it's going to eat us alive. It's going to eat us alive, those of us who garden, but everybody else. Let me tell you, there's some numbers that came out that are pretty important that we need to be aware of. You folks who fish, you better pay attention to this. You folks who garden, you better pay attention. You folks who see your cars floating down the street on Dolphin Street, you better pay attention. There's some work done. It came out in July from some scientists who had been doing some analysis of weather, and it's very interesting because it was, you know, I kept thinking, you know, somebody needs to do this because I'm beginning to perceive that there's something funny going on with rainfall in the southeast, that it's changing, and particularly maybe here in late summer and into fall. And so they did the analysis. I didn't ask them to. They just saw it too, and they said, we have seen between 1895 and 1918, they did a pretty good analysis, a 40% increase, a 40% increase in the amount of rainfall in fall. You know, and that, I think they defined fall as something like late August through early November. 40% increase. That's big. It changes the way you have to view fall. Now, here's the other interesting thing, and this is very important. You got to think about this. You have to think about this. This isn't like the appliance sale at Home Depot. It's not like the lingerie sale for fall. You have to think about this. That rainfall there weren't more rainfall events. There wasn't more days when there was rainfall. What happened was that increase, that 40% increase in rainfall in August, September, October, November, occurred in single events that resulted in lots and lots of rainfall. We're getting less, the rainfall frequency didn't increase, but the intensity of certain storms increased. So that 7-inch rainfall where cars are floating down the street, it's becoming more common. it's something we have to live with. It's something that's become part of the Gulf Coast. It's part of our seasons now. And something we have to think about. You know, climate is going to change for us. And you could argue it always has, and it has. It changes at different rates, depending on the circumstances and depending on what's forcing that climate change. And there's lots of forces out there forcing the climate change. I can't imagine that 7 billion people jumping up and down on this planet doing whatever it is they feel like doing would have any impact on anything. Ah! No. I mean, people don't have any impact on things. You don't see people having any impact, do you? So maybe, I don't know why, but that climate is changing, and we have to deal with it. How are we going to deal with it? Let me suggest, for our own self-preservation, we got to get smart. The first thing we have to do, and this is very important, we really finally have to begin understanding what seasons are. And I could, you know, you can give it whatever name you want to give it, but understanding what seasons really are and how they operate is the key that all cultures have to surviving what happens in the environment. It's the key. If you don't understand those variations in climate, and it's not the kind of simple, it's not what Home Depot defines as spring. Home Depot does not define spring. It's far more sophisticated. I've always said there are probably six seasons here. I think they work out really well. In a lot of parts of the globe, they look at seasons in terms of six seasons. I didn't know that until I began doing the research and realized that we probably had six seasons here. And look, six seasons, probably more people in this world understand climate in terms of six seasons or eight seasons or seasons other than four than who appreciated it as a four-season thing. So we've got to have a really sophisticated view of seasons. We have to have a sophisticated view of what's hot and cold. You know, there are different kinds of hot and cold. There are days when the days and night temperatures don't change. They're both hot. And then there are days when the daytime temperatures are pretty hot, but the nighttime temperatures lower. Those are fundamentally different seasons in how we live, how you operate your house, how fish bite, how your garden grows. We have to understand that cold comes in different ways. And in some ways, the South may be getting colder as climate changes, just a little bit colder. But that doesn't mean that we won't have more warm days than we used to have, more warm nights. It's weird how you look at that. You have to think about it. You have to be very careful about it and looking at it. So the first thing you have to do is think about that. But listen, here's the other issue, and it really comes down to this rainfall thing that we're seeing more of, which we know is a big deal, and we know that that's significant. How are we going to deal with the fact that we're getting more rainfall, and yet we're having these droughts that are killing plants? What's going on? Well, the first thing we have to realize is that these high rainfall events, where all the rain falls at once, 7 inches for your garden is equivalent to a quarter or half inch of real water. Why is that? Because the water falls so fast that it goes into the Gulf of Mexico. So if you're looking at September and you say, oh, we had 10 inches of rain in September. No, you didn't. You probably were lucky to get two or three, because most of that rainfall came in really intense storms that went into the Gulf of Mexico. Didn't used to happen that way. So you got to think about that. You also have to think about the fact that rainfall increases the likelihood, rainfall, particularly intense rainfall, increases the likelihood that you see the effects of drought in your garden much more quickly. And there's a lot of good reasons for that. I say this over and over. If you're going to prepare for drought, and we're going to have to prepare for it more because of the way rainfall is falling, you have to understand the impacts of flooding that occur here. These flood events set us up for these bad drought conditions. And that's why I'm always saying, somebody says, gosh, I don't know how we survive these droughts. And I say, you got to figure out how to survive the floods. If your garden survives the floods, if you don't see any decline or damage to the garden during the floods and damage to your soil during the floods, you're going to be able to survive the droughts. Oh, man. Think about it, folks. That's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to start thinking about where we are and what this changes in climate means, and we're going to have to be smart enough to read those changes in climate. And we're going to have to support people like these researchers in Texas who are doing this great research. Hey, you know, I want to talk to fishermen about what this means for fishing in the Mobile Delta with this increase in rainfall. Been a lot of complaints about this lately. Let's talk about it.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make the land their own. Red clay cracking where the silver queen grows. Running with your cousins from yard to yard. The living was easy, but the playing was hard. Didn't have much, nothing comes for free. All you needed was your family. I am a country girl. I've been around the world. And every place I've been ain't quite nothing like.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Ooh, Zipwhip, my normal ability to interact with you, is acting up this morning. So I'm having a hard time getting your messages. You may need to call in this morning if you've sent me a message by Zipwhip. If you've sent me photographs, alert me because I may not be able to see them unless I know what to look for. Or give me a call this morning. 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. Listen, just to go back to this thing, if rainfall has increased, and it has, the data show it, rainfall's increasing in fall. You know, one of the things that we used to celebrate with the Delta, and for a long, long time we celebrated it with Mobile Bay, was the clarifying, the clearing of waters that tended to occur in August, September, October, and November. But yet we've been seeing now this massive increase in rainfall across the Tom Bigbee and Alabama River basins. And particularly in fall, and what that means is that all of that freshwater flow, and after people have cleared their fields, you know, when the corn has been and the cotton is off the fields, and oftentimes if they're plowing, the ground is bare. During those seasons, we're getting these heavy rainfalls that are exceptionally heavy, and all of it runs off into the rivers because it's the rainfall is occurring too fast for it to be absorbed by the ground, for it to be absorbed into the ground at all. And so that water runs down into the creeks and into the streams and down into the delta. And what's normally a low water season where the water is very clear, suddenly it's becoming very cloudy. And suddenly it knocks out the fishing. How many times have I heard people say, gosh, you know, if that Tom Bigbee doesn't quit flowing, and people keep saying, you know, it's the Tennessee flowing into the Tom, it ain't the Tennessee flowing into the Tom Bigbee. There may be several reasons why we're seeing these to the Delta, but heavy rainfall, you know, you got to look at it. We're seeing a lot more heavy rainfall now. It's going to change the way we fish. It changes the way we fish. We're going to have to start thinking about that because we get those heavy flows into the Delta. We don't get those low water times. We don't get that clear water, and we don't get the reds. We don't get the specks. The specks don't run up as quickly as they used to in some cases, or they may be suppressed, or they may be knocked back because they need low water so that they can move into the delta. All of that, the white shrimp, it affects the white shrimp, affects them in a big way, whether we get big white shrimp harvest is how this rainfall falls. And what about our water supply? You don't think about how this happens, do you? Our water supply is from a lake, at least for many of us, called Big Creek Lake. The reservoir has some capacity to store rainfall, but it doesn't have capacity to store these big 7-inch rainfall events. So they just roll over the dam. And the hills, those longleaf pine hills, we've creamed ourselves in two ways. One, we started building houses in the longleaf pine hills, and those longleaf pine hills stored water and released it slowly into the reservoir. So we didn't need as much reservoir capacity. But now we've got houses all over the place. We've reduced in roads. We've reduced the ability of that reservoir. We've reduced our ability to store water in the forest around that reservoir. And that's significant. That's where most of the water was. It wasn't in the reservoir. It was in those pine hills. And then the rainfall changes. And we get these 7-inch rainfall events, which even the longleaf forest can't capture because it's too much at once. And so most of it just goes over the dam. We have no storage. We don't benefit from the water in a lot of ways. We get more sediment coming in, which means we have to treat it more. All these things are affecting us, and we have to be smart about it. We have to think about it because they are affecting us. And the other thing that's affected, of course, is our gardens. What do we do? And I think about this all the time. Somebody said to me, "Gosh, what are you doing in your garden in Mobile?" Because I admit I've been away a lot. I've had to go up north to find work. It wasn't that far north, but north in Alabama to find some work. I'm working on a project up there, and it's been an interesting project. So I've been away from my garden sometimes, and people said, "Gosh, you know, what are you doing about watering your garden?" I'm not watering my garden. In fact, I almost never water my garden. And the reason is because I build that garden to be resilient and to drought. And the only way I can make my garden resilient to drought, to make it more resisting to where it can resist the impacts of drought, is to make it more resistant to the impacts of floods. And I learned that a long time ago. This excess rainfall, these floods, this is very important if you're a gardener. This is very important in why we do the things we do for our gardens. You can't dig down deep enough to cause water to drain down into your garden because our water table as a result of these floods is very high. And the other thing that happens is the more rain you get, so the water table's already very high. Plants can't put their roots down into the water table, and they can't because there's no oxygen down there. They just rot. You put them in pure water with no oxygen, and those roots rot. So the roots can't go very deep. Isn't that interesting? So what happens is the roots can't go very deep. When it gets dry, when it quits raining, the water table drops. The roots aren't very deep. Boom. Boy, they are just, they don't know what to do. They can't move down fast enough to catch the water table. They're sitting right there on the surface where they could find oxygen, and so they're very susceptible to drought. So what do you do? Well, what you want to do, and this is what I stress over and over, is you need to build lots of organic matter so that you actually are building your soil surface upward, so that you have plenty of oxygen and you can hold plenty of water both. So that when we get these 7-inch floods, your ground, the space between the soil particles, don't get saturated. If the space between soil particles, I'm sorry you have to imagine this, but just imagine it for a minute. If the space between the particles in your soil fills up with water, you know what happens? Your plants drown. They can tolerate it briefly, but not for long. So what you have to do is you have to make sure that there's plenty of space between those soil particles, that they don't get jammed together, and that there's plenty of oxygen in that soil. The only way to do that, there's really only one practical way to do that. Y'all know what I'm going to say, right? It's organic matter. It's organic matter. It's why organic matter is so important to our gardens. And I'm not talking about these little handfuls of compost that people, you know, that they talk about in Boston. Boston's going to learn better, too, because the climate's changing there. But I'm talking about big quantities of organic matter. Every bag of leaves you throw away, you're throwing away the very thing your garden needs to survive. You're throwing away the very thing your lawn needs to survive. Now listen, by telling you this, I'm cutting my own throat because I like it when you throw away leaves because that means I get to take them home. But if you want to understand how to make your garden grow, you got to understand that every bit of organic matter, every bag of leaves, everything that falls in your yard that's organic, even the limbs, are incredibly important to your soil and to making it resilient to drought. Because it makes it more resilient to flooding, which has huge impacts. Hey, give me a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Move into the country. Back, it's a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. Trying to sort through some of the zip whips. It's zip whip is I see darkly. And it's hard for me to see all the messages. I'm working on that. So if you've got a question that you sent me this morning via your text, if you texted me, and I'm sorry, you don't need the word zip whip. What you need to know is we're talking about texts. T-E-X-T-S. If you're sending me a text this morning and I have not responded to it, it's because we got a messy system here. And I can't see them as well this morning. So call me. Just give me a call, and let's talk about it. I did, before it bleeped out on me, I did manage to see that one person texted me, and I can't even find out who that was now, a picture of a plant that was coming up wild in their garden. I see this picture a lot. It's this plant just came out of nowhere. What is it? It's a clerodendron. And if you had to give it a common name, I think the common name most people are giving it, which I think was given to it by the person who had too much of it in his yard and was trying to make it sound good so other people would want it. I think the name that person gave it was Cashmere Bouquet. Cashmere Bouquet. And there's an irony to that, and all you have to do is take the leaves and smell them, and you'll understand the irony in Cashmere Bouquet, because as I like to say, the only thing from Cashmere that smells like that bouquet is a goat. Worst smelling plant, clerodendron. It is, if you don't mind a plant growing everywhere, higgledy-piggledy, which it will do, like bamboo, like a running bamboo, it'll come up 20 feet from where you planted it, and 20 feet from that spot, and 20 feet from that spot. It is very hard. That's your plant, okay? I decided, you know, it may be worth tolerating because it's kind of pretty at times if you don't smell it. But, boy, it's hard to manage in a garden. Just a little word of warning. Just a little word of warning. So some other callers that I am seeing now on Zip Whip, I can see. Dan is asking me, is it time to get the collard seed started? You know, here's the thing. And Dan, if I haven't said this right and clearly enough, let me say it again now. We need collard plants to go in the garden. This is the week. And I think with this cool weather, we are definitely right. If you haven't already put your broccoli in the ground, if you haven't already put your collards in the ground, this is the weekend to do it. It's the perfect weekend to do it. It's the perfect time. Plants go in the ground now. Perfect time to sow turnips, too. We got a problem with the yellow margin leaf beetle. We can talk about that. But it's time to sow turnips. It's not too late to sow radishes at all. It's a good time to sow carrots. I think you can still do well on carrots. So cabbages, collards, broccoli, mustard greens, all of these things, we are perhaps past the we're getting past the worst of the bug season. We're getting past the worst of the heat. Keep your fingers crossed. We're going to come into some rainfall. It's a great time to be planting these things out into the garden. Get them into the garden. It's a good thing. It'll be nice. I hope we're going to get some rain this weekend and Sunday. That'll help us a whole lot if we can do that. So now, Dan, should you start collard seeds now? Let me kale. I should mention kale goes out, parsley. Let me give you that whole list. Kale, parsley, cilantro, all of the Chinese cabbages, pak choys, cabbage, American cabbages, collards, if I haven't mentioned them already, broccoli, now's the time to put them out, cauliflower, you know, I have reservations about cauliflower, but if you want to grow cauliflower, now's the time to put them out. All these things, they need to go out now. You can sow radishes from seeds. They'll do great. They'll do great. Carrots from seed, they'll do great doing that now. You can do collards from seed now. You miss the boat just a little bit. With collards, I like to get the seeds started in August. That's why we talked about getting your seeds back in August, getting them planted that third week in August, the fourth week in August, perfect. Even the first week of September, it's okay. You can get your seeds started then. You put them in the porch on a little thing, and then you put the plants out for things like cabbages and broccoli and collards and kale. You put those plants out now. But you start seeds earlier. If you start your seeds now, you'll still get collards. You're just going to miss most of the best picking season. So, Dan, if get your seeds started right away if you haven't started them already. Or, you know, go to the store and buy a plant. You won't have as much selection, but they do have collard plants. One thing I will tell you is when you buy those plants at the store, look carefully at those little trays they come in because you'll be thinking you're buying six plants and you'll end up with four plants because two of the holes will be empty. You got to watch those guys. You got to watch them. Taxman, hey, it's good to hear from you.
Hey, Bill, I tried to send you some pictures about persimmons. You didn't get them?
Well, no, Taxman.
I'll do it next week. Look,
yeah,
persimmon trees are loaded.
Oh, man.
But anyway, let me tell you something about the hummingbirds. I was out watering. My water runs about 8 hours a day. So I move it every couple hours, 3 hours, whatever. But see, I got so many containers. Now, my plants in the ground are doing good, except my native azaleas. So I'm having to put a little water on them. I don't want them to suffer too much. But the camellias and sanquas and all, they're doing great in the ground. But I was moving my water the other morning about 10 o'clock, and it was spraying. It sprays, and all of a sudden, this little hummingbird came within 2 feet of my head. he just fluttered there, and I looked at him. I thought something was really wrong. Well, I had shot the water over on the loquat tree, those big leaves. And that little hummingbird went over there and took a bath. I've never seen a hummingbird take a bath. It nearly drowned itself. So what I'm saying is this. The birds need water. For goodness sake, put out some water out there, because I didn't realize how bad it was. But it's just terrible out there for the birds.
Yeah. It has been. It has been dry. It has been really, really dry.
And just remember, see, these birds, they depend on the water. But anyway, I got my bird bass and everything loaded up, but I've been real neglectful on the birds. But let's do some catching up. But that was really strange, that little hummingbird, though. He must have stayed there for a good minute or 2 minutes bathing. It's unbelievable. Anyway, let you go.
All right, taxman, it's good to hear from you. You know, I ordered some persimmon trees last night, and I decided I wanted to. I love persimmons. And so I went to and ordered some. Let me tell you, folks, I want to just mention this real quickly, and I'll mention again the next hour. I ordered those plants from Just Fruits and Exotics. I had hoped that we would find a source for fruit trees in Mobile and at the Mobile Botanical Gardens. It hasn't worked out the way I'd hoped. We sometimes have a hard time finding really great varieties that'll work well here along the Gulf Coast. But if you're looking for fruit trees, and Taxman, Just Fruits and Exotics has several great loquat varieties that I think are selections that'll be great. They've really increased their number of loquat varieties. Be fun to try them. Japanese plums, some people call them loquats. They've got a great selection of persimmons. And I was really excited. I'm trying some persimmons that I haven't tried before. I've got some persimmons that are my favorite. If you had to ask me, I mean, Giambo is just one of my favorites. Taxman has some of his favorites. I think Taxman has Tananashi or something like that. Maybe Hachiya, but they can be really good too. I love Giambo. It's a great astringent persimmon that when it gets sweet, it is one of the sweetest things in the whole world. Just beautiful. You put it in a cup and you eat it with a spoon. It is the most beautiful fruit in the whole world. Just absolutely delicious. Just addicting. So I ordered a bunch of persimmons. Ordered a bunch of pomegranates from them too. They've got a great selection of unusual pomegranates that are exciting, including those that fruit on the Gulf Coast. So it's a place called Just Fruits and Exotics. Just Fruits and Exotics. I've been ordering from them for quite a while. This is the first big order I've sent them in a little while. But they're very good. They're in Crawfordville, Florida, and they think a lot about what works here along the Gulf Coast. So if you're looking for fruit trees, that's the place to try. They've got some great pears. We can talk about some of their pears and why they work really good here. Some good peach varieties, good, interesting fig varieties. Someone asked me about Codota figs and would they do well here? But we're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk about that and some of the other fig varieties. And Dan, yes, let me just say, start your seeds now. It's okay. Go ahead and get them started. You miss some of the season, but you don't want to miss the rest of it. Get them started now. We're going to be back.
Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I'll get down on your bended knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Well, welcome back. Don't let Mr. Tim turn you off. Something we have to go through. We just do it. It's good for you in small doses. We're back. Give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106. I kind of have a handle on Zip Whip. I kind of have a handle on your texts, and I can see I'm probably not going to get your pictures very well. But I have a little bit of a handle on your text. But listen, if I've missed your text this morning, give me a call, and let's just talk about it. Kadota figs, you know, I think Kadotas are probably okay for here. I have heard people complain that they're not happy with them. I don't know what to say. I mean, you know, it's worth trialing and worth trialing. Figs are not that expensive, or shouldn't be that expensive, and it's not too expensive to trial them. Again, I think Brown Turkey or Celeste are the one of those I would choose to be the fig I started with, and then branch out. Just Fruits and Exotics, if you want to branch out, has some figs to branch out with. And you know, I think they're going to be recommending figs that they have a long, good history with, because they're in Crawfordville. That's south of Tallahassee. It's a climate very similar to ours, not quite exactly the same, but very similar to ours. And so they've had good experience with the kinds of plants that do really well here. And they sell lots of figs, and it's a good place to look, at least if only as a reference. But, you know, if you find one of their figs and you really like them, you're going to have a hard time finding it somewhere else. That's just the way it is. Just Fruits and Exotics is a great resource. I want to keep emphasizing that. Very happy with their selection of fruit trees. Citrus, they have some great citrus, but one of the problems with citrus is, of course, is that there's an embargo on citrus moving from Florida to Alabama, and there should be because of citrus diseases. So, any rate, just something to think about. Something to think about. Hey, JR, gosh, thank you for holding on. How are you this morning?
Doing fine. Yourself?
Good, good.
My question for you is, I've got an area where we've got some erosion issues, and so I've brought in some clay base, and then I put some topsoil over the top of it. I wanted to plant some of it in Bahia and some of it in Centipede, and because around where my pond is, I wanted to have a lower grass. And what I was wondering is, can I go ahead and put out my Bahia and my Centipede seed and seed in the ryegrass with it now, or do you think it's still a little too warm for the ryegrass?
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be fine for the ryegrass. I would say, well, if it's at any scale and if you're close to the coast, I would not recommend sowing the Centipede. I don't think it's going to do very well. And you may have some problems with the clay, with the topsoil too, but yes, if the simplest answer to that question is the rye is going to do fine. This is
okay. That's what I thought that this last week when we broke our 90s that we'd probably be okay with ryegrass from here out.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you don't get it in, you're not going to get enough growth to make any difference. So you really want to get – the good thing about the rye is that it will help to break up that clay subsoil, which is going to be a big problem. And it may be able to penetrate that clay subsoil if it happens before it gets too rainy. So get that rye on there. That's the most important thing, as quick as you can, to help sort of keep from developing a hard pan in that clay subsoil. And you know, remember, too, that – topsoil ain't what it's cracked up to be if you're buying it. It's probably not true topsoil. It's probably mostly clay and silt and some sand. So you need organic matter. So if you can adding organic matter to that can make a big difference in how things survive. So just remember that. The rye will help add that organic matter.
All right. Well, that's what I was wanting to check. I thought that we were okay to plant the ryegrass, and this topsoil I got is really good. I actually bought a load of compost last week or week before, and this topsoil looks almost as good as the compost I bought. So I was real pleased with it.
Good, good. Yeah, all right.
Thank you, Bill.
Yep, you're welcome. Let's see. So I'm looking at this about mosquito problems. So it's a funny thing. I haven't figured out. I still don't know. And I'm just going to tell you, I am just bumfuzzled. Where did that word come from? It's not a bad word, is it? I think it's okay. It's acceptable to say on radio, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, bumfuzzled. I am bumfuzzled because I don't have mosquito problems. I haven't had any mosquito problems this year. And it, you know, people say, well, it's the dry. It's not, something else is going on. And I think, you know, I have these. So where do mosquitoes breed in suburban neighborhoods? Where do they breed? And this is, so somebody's asking me, what do I do about the mosquito problem in my neighborhood where the houses are close together and we've got live oaks? So where are these mosquitoes breeding? Something happened, and I cannot figure out what it is in my yard. I think my suspicion is that somebody near me had a swimming pool or something, like a cover on a swimming pool that was collecting water. The water didn't get too deep. It didn't really allow predators for mosquitoes, and it was producing tons of mosquitoes. And at some point, that ideal habitat for mosquitoes just disappeared. Maybe it was a tree or trees that were collecting water, and those trees are gone because I lost some trees in my yard, including a really big live oak that had lots of holes in it. And had lots of crotches that could hold water. Could that be what it was? Maybe. All of those things can affect it. You know, here's another thing that I think can affect mosquito populations in your yard that we don't think about. Sewers. I have a suspicion that in some of our, you know, we have very old sewer systems. And they collect water. They don't sometimes release water that well. And they hold water. And I suspect that they become sources of mosquito breeding at times. And I don't think we think about that. They certainly are good homes for the raccoons. I don't know how the raccoons deal with the mosquitoes, because I know they're bad in those sewers. I've seen the mosquitoes hover around the sewer mouths. So I think that's another thing. Another source of mosquitoes. All those things can be huge sources. And then, of course, there's the small things. The gutters. There's a trash can. I have a city trash can, and the top is broken on it, and I haven't replaced it yet. And so it rains in it. It fills up with water. And you know what happens when it fills up with water? Mosquitoes breed in there like crazy. And any little bucket, these things, those are all mosquito problem areas. So you have to find the source of those mosquitoes and try to eradicate it. Sometimes it's in your yard and sometimes not. But give me a call. We can talk more about it next hour. We got to take a big break here because we want to know what the news is, don't you? We're going to be back. Give us a call.
My girl. My girl.